Thanks for joining us today to learn a little bit about understanding Regulation A and retail and equity crowdfunding. We've got a great hour planned for you here. So just to give a few minutes to introduce the panel, we've got Kevin Morris, CFO of Wavemaker Labs here. Wavemaker Labs is a venture fund focused on disruptive technologies. They've made about 250 investments in the last 10 years. Kevin has a key finance eye, and I've noticed in the clients we've worked with, he brings an astute ability for calculating ROI and capital raising, having been on the cutting edge of technologies in a variety of industries with Wavemaker. He takes a really intelligent approach to this way of capital raising, which is why we've asked him to speak to the DealMaker community today. So thanks for joining us, Kevin, and welcome. The second panelist we have for you today is John Stid. John is CEO at Ridge Growth, a digital marketing agency specializing in the retail capital raising space. So doing lots of Reg CF and Reg CA and Reg A crowdfunding capital raises. He has a background in management consulting, and he's founded multiple companies, building out their initial teams, doing go-to-market strategy, and shaping their brand marketing strategies. He's worked successfully with a large number of dealmaker issuers and is considered an expert in the digital security space, which is why we've asked him to speak to you today. I can also tell you from personal experience that Ridge Growth is really busy these days. So if you want to work with them after this panel, you'll have to put your game face on. They're one of the teams that are doing really cutting edge, interesting things. So if you can't get in there to work with them, you can at least benefit with some of their experience on this panel today. So thanks for being here, John, and sharing your ideas on the space. Our final panelist is Mike Weary, VP of Sales at DealMaker. Mike works really closely with countless of CEOs and CFO clients using the DealMaker platform on their capital raises. So he brings a broad perspective to the panel of what he sees happening in the market. He has a background growing sales at a number of different organizations in the finance sector, real estate tech, banking tech, marketing tech, at three-digit pace. He also has led national expansion plans for multinationals at award-winning pace. So he brings a keen eye on how to execute efficiently and with pace and where efforts should be targeted. So if you're on the phone with your DealMaker advisors after this panel, make sure to take advantage of Mike's expertise that we're personally benefiting from here at DealMaker as we scale our own organization. So thanks for being here, Mike.
Thank you.
A few legalities. Since I am a lawyer, this presentation presents general information about business practices and certain exemptions available under securities law. It is not legal advice or business advice, so you should not rely on it as such. All the opinions are those of the speakers only and not an overviewing organization, and you should only act on professional advice by licensed professionals you've retained with respect to your specific business. So now let's go ahead and jump into it. We're going to ask, the panelists are going to give us a little bit of an overview of the equity crowdfunding space. Kevin will kick it off, and then we'll go into a discussion component followed by a Q&A.
Great. Thanks, Rebecca. Well, good morning and good afternoon to everyone on the call. I'm going to give a bit of an overview of equity crowdfunding. Some of you may know this, some of you may not. I'll try and keep it somewhat brief. And then if there's additional questions, we can always discuss it during the Q&A session. So, you know, at a high level, equity crowdfunding allows smaller companies, startups to raise money from the general public without having to do a traditional IPO. In the past, this wasn't possible. And it's been around in other countries since before it was in the US, but relatively new in the US, went into effect in 2016. The majority of equity crowdfunding rounds are actually done online. So think of them like a Kickstarter, of course, but for equity. You can raise money from the crowd. So traditionally, if you were a startup and you wanted to raise a few million dollars or more for a seed or series A, you'd do it from a few investors. You know, you'd have a lead investor and then some follow-on investors. That's kind of the traditional route. Or you would do something that's friends and family. But now you can raise millions of dollars from thousands of investors. So instead of pitching, you know, let's say 10 or 20 VCs or the like to raise a few million dollars, you're pitching 100,000 people and you're raising the same amount of money, but from a lot more individuals. One of the unique things about equity crowdfunding is it strips away any rules around general solicitation. Which, you know, obviously, if you're doing an IPO, there's a lot of restrictions there. IPOs are expensive, as everyone can probably imagine. Equity crowdfunding rounds, you can get started for as little as $50,000 to launch your round. One of the nice things, again, I'm an entrepreneur at heart, is through equity crowdfunding, you're able to keep more control with your business. And if you typically do, say, a VC-led round or a round led from a high net worth individual or an institutional investor, you're typically giving up board seats. You're issuing stock with different rights, which can, you know, many times be crippling to the operating team and the founding team and the executive team. One of the other unique things about equity crowdfunding, it builds brand awareness and loyalty. John Stid, we'll be talking about this a bit more down the line in the next few slides. But that's pretty unique, especially for B2C businesses where you have a retail facing component. The fact that you can all of a sudden target investors as customers and target customers to be potential investors is pretty unique. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the next few slides. And one of the things that a lot of people don't really appreciate until they've started the equity crowdfunding process is you can outsource a lot of the legwork. If you are a founder or you're on the board or you're the CEO of a large company trying to raise money traditionally, it takes up a lot of your time. And while raising money is important, it does become a distraction to running and growing your business. With equity crowdfunding, a lot of the work can actually be outsourced to more junior people on your team, to outside agencies or outside consulting firms like Ridge Growth, like what we do at Wavemaker Labs. And that's actually pretty meaningful. And I don't think a lot of people realize that because, you know, founders, no one really loves to raise money. They love growing their business, but you have to raise money and you have to take a lot of your time. So that's another unique thing that I've seen being on both sides of the equity crowdfunding space is that you can, it frees up founders to focus on growing their business and their brands. Just a little bit about kind of the what Ridge Growth and Wavemaker Labs have done in the equity crowdfunding space. This is just a few of the clients that we've worked with or that we have at Wavemaker Labs. We've successfully raised money over $5 million and beyond for Reg A Pluses for a number of companies, not only in the B2B space, but also the B2C space and, you know, all sorts of different industries, lawn mowing, apparel, delivery pharmaceuticals, all sorts of things. And there's countless more, but, you know, we've Ridge Growth and the Wavemaker Labs team, we've had tons of success via Reg A Pluses.
You know, one of the sort of externalities of crowdfunding, right, is, you know, not only are you acquiring investors, through a marketing funnel, right? So acquisition doesn't happen sometimes all in one day, right? There's a lead generation process and nurturing to that. But one of the larger externalities there is the brand awareness that you're going to build based off of that, right? So for the NowRx campaign above, as Kevin mentioned, you know, throughout the lifetime of that campaign, there were 136 million impressions, right? So not all of those were unique, but probably somewhere between 90 and 100 million people were introduced to NowRx as a brand, right? And we've seen that across the board where companies have record months of sales when they work with us because, you know, with that investment dollar behind the equity crowdfunding campaign, you're introducing a lot of new people to your brand. So NowRx has had record months, you know, Wink has had record months. Everybody in every space that we've worked with has been propelled by that. Gatsby, an options trading app. So just a handful of examples there. And that can be a bit of a virtuous cycle for the company itself, because you can take that update and repurpose it and say, you know, hey, we're having record months here, because this is something that Kevin and the team are really good at. But, you know, how do you, over the lifetime of a campaign, continue to nurture people and give out updates, whether those are partnerships or advisors coming on or general company business updates, right? So it's almost self-fulfilling in a way when you can leverage the marketing spend for new acquisition as well. So that ties in a lot to, you know, investors as customers, right? So people are being introduced to the brand, but also, you know, the brand loyalty there where, you know, who would be a bigger advocate for your brand than somebody who's also invested in it? And you can see that in the commentary when, you know, people continue to engage with their investors and, you know, people coming onto comment boards. We've seen it with NowRx where you know, people advocate them for them on their ads for their direct to consumer campaigns, you know, touting that they're an investor for it. Or even somebody like Monogram Orthopedics, they're in the med tech space. And quick background, Monogram Orthopedics, hip and knee replacements, custom fitted, 3D printed. So it's, you know, fit to them. And they get people, you know, begging for a replacement on there. So there's certainly a customer acquisition byproduct to all of these campaigns, right? So, you know, so I talked a little bit above about, you know, the consumer acquisition piece, and that's what we have our background in, right? So we were primarily focused on direct-to-consumer acquisition before, and, you know, apparel brands, food and beverage, that sort of thing. So when we first got introduced to this 3.5 years ago through NowRx's first campaign, you know, we said, okay, let's take these digital tactics and apply them to equity crowdfunding, right? So think of it as a considered purchase, a luxury purchase. And this is why it's always nice to have Kevin on board with the campaigns that we work together on. You know, his background is in direct to consumer. But what we do for these campaigns is focused around, you know, driving traffic top of funnel, bringing them to a website, offering an investor experience, right? So that's the, you know, if we're looking at acquisition channels here, it's typically around 60% on paid social there, you know, paid search, a lot of search volume around keywords like startups to invest in, pre-IPO companies to invest in, that sort of thing. And then from there, we typically have, you know, some partnerships that we work with. So, you know, in Q4 of last year, we ran probably, you know, $3 to $4 million worth of partnerships across email newsletters and sponsored content. So not only do we have a base of those that I would consider bread and butter, where we have some pretty good benchmarks for the performance of that, but adding new ones into the fold that are really specific to the brand, right? So if it's in, you know, mid tech, where we're trying to get in sort of medical journals and that sort of thing, right? So taking that, these top of funnel digital channels, driving them to the landing pages that are very investor focused, right? So it would, you know, taking your pitch deck and turning that into a beautiful website, right? Capturing email addresses on there, because again, part of the great thing about working with Kevin and the team is the way that they can advise on, you know, the continued email updates and company updates throughout the lifetime of the campaign. So when you land on the page, we're trying to capture the email addresses. So over the lifetime of a campaign, somebody like NowRx will have over 20,000 emails by the end of their campaign, which, again, if we're talking about a good consumer acquisition byproduct, you now have 20,000 email addresses. But over the lifetime of the campaign, you know, you bring them in, 85% of the traffic is going to come on mobile. So you get to continue to drip them content up front. And then over the lifetime of the campaign, and then particularly at the back end of the campaign in that final month, where we see about 50% of the investment dollars come in during that final month.
So, you know, want to talk a little bit about Miso Robotics, which is a Wavemaker Labs backed company. John and I are currently managing their campaign on DealMaker, which we'll get into more a bit later. So we've raised over $20 million in this current Series C round. It's a bit at a high level burger flipping robots. We're currently deployed in White Castle, actually not making their burgers, but managing their fryer. We've been able to successfully raise $20 million in counting. We're still actually raising right now. And we've done it with, you know, kind of multiple approaches on the marketing and kind of press side. I mean, we're not a B2C business, we're a B2B business, but we've leaned in heavily on press. We do quite a bit of press. We have an outside PR firm that's gotten us in every major publication you can think of. We have done investor perks. I'd say investor perks are, they're always up to the discretion of the issuer or the company. And those can be helpful. I think they're even more meaningful for B2C businesses, but we have offered investor perks. And going back to what John mentioned, strategic ad placements. So we have done ads on Instagram, Google, Facebook, you know, things like that. We've also done a lot of other newsletter style placements. Morning Brew is a good example. We've advertised on Entrepreneur. We've advertised on Tesla Roddy. And, you know, people would say, well, you're a B2B business. You're doing all this advertising. You're doing all this press. Yeah, it's helping your fundraise, but are those dollars that you're kind of throwing away after the fundraise? I would say no, because the amount of inbound interest we've had from potential customers in the fast food space because of our press, because of our digital ads, has been crazy. Obviously, I can't share the specific requests that we've gotten, but we've had people email us, cold email us from our contact form on the website, and those people have turned into customers. And so I'd say, you know, going back to your B2C business, your ad dollars are clearly dual purpose for your fundraise because you're going to be acquiring customers and investors. The same goes for B2B businesses. It's a slightly different variety of people, but you're going to have the, you know, that exposure you're getting is going to be extremely powerful for your business. The other thing I'll say is it just overall just, you know, increases the kind of the general awareness of what your company is doing. And I'd have to say that raising money through equity crowdfunding, in my experience, also gives this kind of extra level of validity and kind of like that check mark. Especially if people are interested in investing or people trying to become customers, getting your brand name out there is extremely powerful, regardless of if you're a B2C or a B2B business. So just kind of summarizing why crowdfunding, and I think we have a few more slides after this, I'd say, and again, this is from the entrepreneur / executive founding team perspective, it allows you to keep control of your company. And again, there's different flavors of equity crowdfunding, how, what kind of types of shares you offer, but you tend to, you know, kind of apples to oranges, you know, you tend to be able to keep more control than if you were to raise money traditionally. Preferential valuation is also kind of related. You know, again, in my experience, from what we've seen, people who invest in equity crowdfunding deals, it's, you know, it's because they're passionate about the business. Obviously, they want to see the business succeed, but you tend to, you know, be able to get valuations that are more preferential to the founders than if you were to raise money traditionally. You know, obviously, experienced team here, which I think we can get into later. And I think also just, you know, going back to brand awareness and loyalty, the fact that you're able to expose the general population to your business, I think is pretty powerful through equity crowdfunding. Just kind of quickly summarizing as well, you know, before equity crowdfunding, if you wanted to raise money and you were kind of a startup, early stage, seed, pre-seed or series A, you'd either raise money through friends and family, which is kind of hard to organize. You're getting smaller checks. You can raise money through accredited investors, which are frankly hard to find and target. Or you could do kind of a more traditional venture capital led round, which I think, you know, is great. You can raise a substantial amount of money, but you are giving up control. To summarize the three types of equity crowdfunding, there's Regulation CF, which allows you to raise up to $5 million in a calendar month. Regulation D allows you to raise money from accredited investors. Again, hard to target. And then Regulation A. And Regulation A, you can raise up to $75 million from the general public. And that includes institutional investors. That includes a lot of countries overseas that you can raise money from. And I think Regulation A plus is the most meaningful of all these. And high level summary of the process. And again, this differs for every company. So certainly this is not, you know, it will change depending on the type of company you are. But to do a Regulation A plus, first of all, you know, you have to go to the SEC for examination. That process, including preparing your audited financials, can take up to 4 to 6 months from when you kind of say, I want to start a Reg A plus to when you're qualified by the SEC. So the SEC does not approve your offering. They qualify your offering. And so that can take a while because you have to get audited financials, 2 years audited financials. And depending on your type of business, that could take a while. And most startups don't have audited financials because they've never needed to have them. So that to me, you know, can slow down your offering. The one thing I'll say is that having audited financials, one is great because again, from my background, it's just great to have audited financials and to know where everything is, but it also does help, I think, make you, it goes back to that kind of stamp of approval. If you are a startup and or a smaller company of audited financials, it just makes you that more of a, I think, valid and legit in the eyes of current investors and even future investors. One of the unique things about Reg A Plus is that you can do what's called reservations or testing the waters. So you're allowed to, the SEC says, you know, we will allow you to test demand for your offering in the general public, and you don't have to be qualified by the SEC. This is great because it allows issuers to say, hey, I don't really know how my offering is going to do. That's one of the downsides of a Reg A Plus or any equity crowdfunding is you don't know how much money you're going to raise until you start the process and you start raising it. With traditional venture-led rounds, you know, you kind of have your excuse me, your lead investor and everybody follows. And so you kind of know how much you're going to raise. But with testing the waters / reservations, you can test the waters literally before you start the complicated process of getting an audit, going through SEC qualification. The other nice thing is with reservations, you can literally have people reserve their spot in line for your round. So once the round gets qualified and you launch, you may have this initial fast start where, it's kind of a snowball effect where people have reserved their spot. Once you get qualified, you can start the round strong, which I think everybody can understand that starting the round strong is important because you're trying to raise millions of dollars from thousands of people. Nobody wants to be the first dollar in, but if you can launch a round with a few hundred grand, let's say, invested from reservations, that really helps the flywheel effect on your round. The last thing I'll say is with Regulation A+, you are subject to semi-annual reporting with the SEC. You have to submit what's called a 1SA, which is kind of unaudited / prepared financials. And then you have to submit what's called a 1K, which is your annual audited financial report. So that is something that through equity crowdfunding, you are required to do either annual or semi-annual reporting, which I think isn't difficult, but it is one of the things that issuers should be aware of.
Okay. So just to give a bit of a background on where DealMaker is, I like to say that DealMaker is really the rails that allows for a Reg A to run effectively, smoothly, and successfully. Reg A, as we're, bringing a number of people together on this call to sort of see, like, it's a team sport. It requires, a marketing team. It requires a management team participation. It requires a broker dealer. It requires, investor relations potentially to help with managing conversion. So DealMaker is the tool that all of those teams work together on to make the raise successful. And so where we often tend to work with clients, we started the process oftentimes pre-filing or at the time of filing. And we have a team of a team that has deep expertise in the operational aspects of, really every type of private placement, but Reg A specifically, that is there to, act as the connector. We will connect you with the right team for your raise, the right, the marketing partners like John, people like Kevin to help with some of the management, broker dealers, et cetera, to help assemble that team to make it successful. And DealMaker at its core, the platform itself, does really four or five main things. So we track all of the investors as they come in. So, the work that John's doing to drive investors in from, websites, Facebook, newsletters, what have you. As every investor comes in, they're tagged and tracked by where they came in from. So for the issuer and for the marketing team, you really know in real time exactly the effect and the impact of your marketing dollars on investors, total amount that is being raised and the average investment amount. The second side of it is DealMaker acts as the interface for the investors and the actual raise. So they go through a question flow. It's proprietary to us. We've boiled down the Reg A to really 7 to 12 questions that they need to answer off. It's just fill in the blanks and, check off the right box that will take them through correctly every single time. It takes about 3 minutes, and that's incredibly important when you're talking about raising from a retail perspective. Having a really clean, easy, and compelling way for the investor to go through. We also provide the payment apparatus. So, it's a retail investment raise, it's a digital raise, credit card, ACH, wire, check, all really, all the payment methods that we offer. And digital payments are extremely important. It does a couple things. It will increase your conversion, increase the amount of investments and the speed at which the investment actually comes in. But it helps to actually drive conversion. And in a meaningful way. And then the final piece of it is that, there's the happy path of investor X goes through in one fell swoop and, completes their subscription and pays. But DealMaker has a full CRM that gives you real-time data where every investor is with respect to completing their investment, where they are in terms of their question, what question they're on, have they funded, so that the team can actually work in a really effective way to drive conversion. We'll talk about this, I'm sure, a little bit more later on, but drive conversion and speed up the raise and make it just that much more successful.
Okay, great. Thanks, everyone. So that was a really good overview of some of the aspects of digital capital raising and Regulation A+. I'll open up the discussion portion of the seminar now with a broad question to all of the panelists. Given that you've all worked on many successful Reg A's and have a ton of experience, let's start with the question that most issuers come to us when they're first considering a Reg A, which is how much can I raise? Or maybe to be better put, what should I expect and be thinking about as I look to raise different amounts, 5 million, 15 million, 25 million and beyond?
I can take that first. So yeah, I mean, again, one of the downsides, of course, is with equity crowdfunding is you don't know how much you're going to raise until you raise it. A lot of the money comes in at the end of the campaign. That's just how it works. You know, there's never there's less of a sense of urgency, right? Because if you're trying to raise $20 million, that could take a while. And so Misa Robotics, we've raised $20 million in about 10 months. That's one of the nice things about testing the waters is you're able to working with someone like Ridge Growth Agency, driving ad traffic to a landing page to gauge interest on the valuation, on the minimum investment amount. That's extremely helpful. And especially working with Wavemaker Labs and Ridge Growth, being able to comp, say, hey, based on success that we've seen in other deals, this is how much we think you can raise. Ad spend is extremely important. And so if you are, I think you need to set a goal and say, hey, I need this much money at this valuation. And then work backwards and say, okay, well, if it's a 6-month raise, this is how much we need to spend. These are the metrics we need to hit. A lot of this money comes in at the end. So what we've done with a lot of our clients is really plan out a full marketing calendar. And that coincides with press, that coincides with digital ad spend. The average investment amount for these deals is high. So Misa Robotics right now, our average investment is about $3,000. That's a lot of money to ask somebody to put in. So when they're exposed to a deal, let's say tomorrow, if someone hears about Misa Robotics, $3,000 is a lot of money. They're likely not going to invest tomorrow when they see the ad. Compare that to somebody selling $25 widgets on Instagram, right, with a basic Shopify account. Shopify setup, $25 isn't a lot. So I drive ad traffic to my $25 widget page. People buy. $3,000 is like Louis Vuitton average cost, right? And people know Louis Vuitton and they see it everywhere, and it's this image and this brand, and they invest a lot of money into doing that. So with equity crowdfunding, you're asking somebody to put up that much money. They're not going to do it right away. The reason I bring that up is that digital ad spend, you want to spend a lot of money throughout the campaign, but especially initially, and you want to pump out updates to the crowd throughout the life of the campaign. Because otherwise, people are going to get exposed to a deal, and if they don't see progress in the business, if they don't see press, if they don't see updates, new advisor, new CEO, new director, all those things, new product line, they're just going to go away, and they're not going to want to invest. And so that's why, talking with John, and I'll segue to John after this, but his slide about it's funnel economics. And if you don't have the e-com background, that's why it's great to work with a company like Ridge Growth is, you bring people top of funnel, but you constantly retarget them throughout the life of the campaign and slowly push them to eventually invest.
So Kevin touched on a lot of the really good points there. It's like, how much can you raise? And always the unfortunate answer to that is you don't know until you raise it. And as Kevin mentioned, that's why testing the waters is really great for a ton to get out there and also provide that initial starter, right? Because nobody wants to be the first dollar in. But for, the tactical answer to that, we at this point have enough benchmarks of, running 30 plus campaigns where we do have some good proxies on that, but we have been surprised in the past, right? Working with a biometrics company that does data hashing for information for banks, right? Our initial thoughts were, whoa, you're talking about probabilistic AI and biometrics. That's going to be a tough raise, but they had a record raise at a record low spend. And when I'm talking about spend, we typically advise folks, somewhere 7-10% of your raise goal, and you're going to see diminishing returns, right? $50 million campaign, we're going to come in probably 10-15% of your raise goal. But for the company that I'm referring to, Trust Stamp, that are actually now listed on the Euronext. But they had a record campaign. And part of that was, to Kevin's point, about the continued updates. They were announcing new advisors, new sovereign partnerships, that sort of thing. So really important to strategically plan the campaign, testing the waters, getting that, you know, investment total up out of the gate, staggering updates throughout the lifetime of the campaign to, you know, engage and nurture people and drive them over that hurdle. Kevin talked about the Louis Vuitton bag, but that really is how we look at it, where it's a considered purchase of, you know, the highest amount. So you need these touch points for folks. And then part of what, you know, we do, and it's helpful with graphs where we level set expectations of raise amounts and how that paces over the lifetime of the campaign, because with our benchmarks, we can show the uptick at the end. We had a campaign end recently, ended up raising 14 million total, 6 million came in the last day, right? We have a good idea of how those dynamics work because that's a function of top of funnel. People have come in, haven't yet invested, and we get to track that. And that's one of the wonderful parts about working with DealMaker, really good data analytics. So we know top of funnel and have enough proxies with previous campaigns where we know X amount of that top of funnel is going to convert. So we know what to overshoot for. You know, we are projecting that out and trying to convey that to the executive team, saying, you know, hey, here's what we're on track for, and here's what can happen in the final month, final 3 weeks, final week, final day, as I mentioned, which can be a leap of faith, but the graphs are helpful to share that with. So long answer there, you know, it certainly depends on the company and the space. And again, back to the point of just continued updates throughout the course of your campaign to nurture and engage people and, you know, convey all the important information about your company, whether that's what you already have going on or new partnerships, advisors, revenue streams, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And just to jump in here, you know, obviously this is a question that I get a lot. You know, just because the limits are now $75 million doesn't mean that you can go out there and, you know, just be, it's like the field of dreams, you know, just because you launch a raise doesn't mean $75 million is going to come in. There's a lot of work that has to go into that. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into 15 million, 20 million and 25 million, just there. I would say, you know, first off, if this is the first go around with equity crowdfunding and a Regulation A+, set reasonable expectations, you know, 5 to 10 million. That's a very doable range for the vast majority of issuers out there and can be achieved in a relatively, you know, good time frame. And then, you know, figure it out from there. Go out and, you know, plan to do, you know, 5 to 10 million in round one. And then you can launch after the fact at, you know, 20 or 25 million or even more, depending on the success. So that's one thing. There's a couple things just overall that will factor into the speed and the, you know, the amount of investment that comes in. You know, one, how similar is the company to what's just generally hot in the market right now? You know, we've seen a lot of success with like EV battery, drone, cannabis at times, like all of those deals have had, you know, a big moment with the overall markets, telemedicine, you know, medical stuff, all those things. That will help to drive it. You know, if you're a public company, how attractive the pricing of your Reg A is compared to, you know, the public securities, that will help to drive it. You know, that said, you know, we closed 3 Reg A's in February on DealMaker. You know, one was 50 million, one was 20 million, one was 4 million. All of them were oversubscribed and all of them did them in, you know, a month and a half. Well, it was like 2 months, 2 to 3 months. So there's a lot of success to be had and you know, you can do it quickly. But for those ones, a lot came together. The final piece is that as you get further and further into that higher raise territory, that's where you want to be thinking about rounding out your strategy for dealing with investors. You know, if you're getting into 25 million plus, you've got to think, you know, just outside of just retail investors, you've got to have, you know, a targeted approach to accredited investors and family offices, institutionals as well, to try to make up some of that additional capital.
Thanks, Mike. One thing you touched on is a question that I know I hear a lot, so I'll direct it to John. What kind of companies or brands or stories are best set up to succeed? I get that question all the time. Do you have a preference?
Sure. And Mike alluded to this a little bit, right? Anything in the zeitgeist at the moment is obviously helpful, right? We've seen a lot of success with MISO robotics around AI and robotics and automation in that space, right? We have always been surprised. I will say, the retail investors that you are getting in front of may not take you to task about, your valuation, $5 million one way or the other. But they do, have the same aspirations as any investor in terms of exit. So, we have seen stronger returns with, tech and SaaS related companies in the space. So.
Yeah. One other thing I'll add is that I think regardless of your business, you need to have a very clear explanation as to what you do in your thesis. It goes back to, if you're raising money traditionally, let's say you have a great business. You're raising money traditionally, you may make 50 pitches and we'll get five investors to raise 10 million bucks. Again, these are rough numbers. But when you're making those 50 pitches, you're in the room or you're on a call for an hour with people and you can explain it, Q&A, all these things. It's very easy to sell that way. If I'm trying to raise $10 million through equity crowdfunding, I'm making, in theory, a million pitches, right? But each pitch is like 30 seconds. I'm showing them an ad. I'm getting them in front of something. You need to be very clear what you do. I've seen a lot of businesses that don't explain their story well in kind of three or four sentences or have the wrong assets and it's not clear. And so I think it's really important. And again, if you're a B2B business and you don't have a marketing eye because you're a B2B business and you're focused on product and tech, it's really important to invest in the right assets and the right storytelling up front, because that's going to pay dividends throughout the life of the campaign through equity crowdfunding. So for example, if you want to do a video shoot or a still photo shoot of your lawnmower, again, we have a commercial automated lawnmower business called Graze. Normally you'd say, well, why would I spend 10, 20K on a still photo shoot or 50K on a video? I'm on my third prototype, right? I'm a year from MVP or whatever. Well, it's because you're trying to raise money through equity crowdfunding and it's a lawnmower business, which is not as sexy as a burger flipping robot, but it is a great business. And you want to invest in that upfront, because, John can attest to is if you have good assets and good creative, it's going to pay dividends on your conversion rate, on your click-through rate, on the cost it takes for you to get in front of people. So I would say that obviously I agree with John and, zeitgeist, like what's popular, what's the, kind of spirit of the times right now. But you also want to make sure that you invest properly in storytelling and in marketing assets initially, because it will help you down the line.
Yeah. Just to iterate on or add to my point onto that, I listed off, my thoughts, which is similar to John's, and some of the things that will better be better predictors of success and speed in your raise. But I've been continually surprised. I've seen lots of companies that were, unsexy and, not of the moment. And, they go out there fast out of the gate and they're able to raise, to their amount and even oversubscribed in a very quick way. And it does come down to marketing. It does come out to how well thought out the strategy is going into it. And, can you figure out a way to target and engage your correct segment? The segment of people that is most likely to invest.
Kevin touched on something, Mike, I know you are really keen on in talking about the conversion funnel. Do you want to give us any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, Reggae, when you're talking about going out to retail investors and raising, whether it's 5, 10, 15 or more million dollars, it's a conversion game big time. I would say that just to sort of add on to that, of all the Reggae's that we've done on our platform, there's sort of like a range of, an average investment of, let's call it 1500 all the way up to 17,000 that we've seen on a Reggae for their average investment. The average across the board is about 5,000. But if you think about where you're going out to raise from 1,000, 3,000, 10,000 investors to make up what your goal is. If you don't put attention into actually converting people that come through, it's it becomes much harder. Then you just continually have to drive more and more top of funnel. You know, I would say that the overall, I talked about it earlier, the happy path conversion of, you know, investor X sees your raise on a Facebook campaign. They click invest now. They go through the question, the flow, they fund all in one fell swoop. That's like, I don't know, let's call it 5% of the time. That may be high, that may be low. I've seen some variation there, but it's not the norm. And so you need to actually devote attention to managing the people who are in your investment, sending updates to them, reminders, you know, some of the stuff that John does with the drip campaigns, that's really important. But the power of DealMaker and the thing that, you know, nobody else has is really, we've provided in real time, you know, a list of all of your investors and where they are. So you can actually follow up on them. And it makes a huge impact, both in terms of the time that you need to spend on the raise and the amount of money that you spend on your raise, because you think of, I don't know, 1,000 investors, you know, coming through at an average investment of $5,000 to make up $5 million. If you've got 10% conversion, you've got to find, you've got to drive 50,000 people into the top of the funnel. But if you have, you know, 35 or 40% conversion, which we've seen on some raises, you know, you're going to drive just significantly less than that. And you're going to be able to do it in a much more cost-effective and just effective quick raise.
Thanks, Mike. Kevin, talk to us a little bit about valuation and pricing. This is something that sometimes we get questions on, a different, right, in equity crowdfunding is you don't have a banker setting pricing. So any thoughts on how people should be thinking about valuation and pricing around?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, you know, you can leverage testing the waters to test out your pricing, which I think is pretty powerful. The other thing I'll say is, you can obviously look at comps in the equity crowdfunding space. The other thing I'll say is that you can launch your round at a certain price. You can change that price during the round. Now, I believe you can increase your price, for example, by 20% without having to go back to the SEC for with an amendment. You essentially file what's called a supplement. You can change your price, increase it, and probably decrease it by 20%. You can also change the minimum investment amount, which is, you know, is pricing, right? It's not the share price, but you can flex on and flex off. The one thing I'll say is that, you know, it is expensive to acquire investors through digital ad spend. And obviously the higher minimum investment, that's going to help your return on ad spend on a per investor basis. The other thing I'll say is that, you know, some people say, well, do I do $500 or $1,000 or $1,000 or $1,500? You know, in my experience, what we've seen is that your average investment tends to be about 2x your minimum investment. Now, again, that's going to, you know, differ. So I've seen deals where there's a $250 minimum investment. The average investment is 3x. But, you know, in the sweet spot for Reg A's that I've seen, and again, DealMaker may have some different experiences, kind of for Reg A, about $1,000 average investment a minimum investment is what I've seen. And that goes to, you know, if somebody's investing $750, going, you know, if the minimum investment is $750 and you increase it to $1,000, well, you're only asking them to put $250 more. So the person who can invest $750 probably can afford $1,000. And I think it goes back to making sure that your return on ad spend economics are positive. Again, but there are companies out there that are B2C and they just want to acquire investors to be loyal. And they know that there's all these cool perks and they're selling $25 widgets and they're also wanting equity crowdfunding. So you're going to have a lower investment amount. So you also want to know your audience, especially if you're B2C, you know, you're not going to equity crowdfund for a luxury apparel brand whose average purse, again, you know, this is a made up business. The average purse, the average cart side for the products they sell is $2,000. You know, you're not going to go in and have a $250 minimum investment for Reg A, right? Because the person who your company resonates to, you know, already has a certain kind of, they're a certain demographic. So I think it's also important to know what your business is. You know, I think, NowRx, which is, you know, I know the people over there, they, you know, I could see them in theory take a mentality where, well, we want our minimum investment to be low because when we acquire investors, we're also acquiring future customers because they're a delivery pharmacy business. So in theory, they can sell their product to anyone. So, you know, a bit, again, a long-winded answer, but it really depends on the industry you're in. It also depends on what your end goal is, because there's plenty of clients that I've worked with that their only reason they're equity crowdfunding is one, to raise money, but they also want to acquire customers.
Yeah. Couple of questions from the audience I want to throw out to the panel. First one, can you use DealMaker and a broker-dealer simultaneously?
Yes. So, I mean, it's the answer is it's highly, highly recommended. There are scenarios where you can do Reg A plus with, not through a broker-dealer. I'm not going to get into those details now. But for Miso Robotics, we work with DealMaker and we work with a broker-dealer called Dalmore Group, D-A-L-M-O-R-E. They're based on the East Coast. And so the great thing about this is Dalmore and DealMaker work together in lots of deals. And so it's very seamless. Again, from the Miso Robotics side, I don't really have to worry about how Dalmore and DealMaker communicate. They just do. And again, DealMaker may work with other BDs. I'm not sure. I don't know if Mike or Rebecca, you want to add to that.
Yeah, I mean, I just think I have a sense of the question. I think there is a broker dealer that's generally that is required under a tier two to do compliance, you know, FINRA, insurance, all that sort of stuff for the raise. The question might be related to having a separate broker dealer, you know, who's actually going out there and engaging investors, you know, aside from just digital marketing. From that perspective, yes, absolutely. Yes, you can. So the vast majority of raises that we work on have some sort of a broker dealer type relationship who actually works to help drive funnel conversion. And that's a really important piece, you know, having somebody who can actually act as the mouthpiece for the company and talk to investors and sort of explain, you know, yes, this is a good investment, you know, give details about the company, things that you need a license to be able to do. So that's really important. I don't know if John or anyone else has additional thoughts there.
Okay. Second question, can you direct list from a Reg A with DealMaker and Ridge Growth Reg A, or do you need to then do a traditional underwritten offering with registered BDs to list if your valuation is under 100 to 200 million?
And again, I'm not an expert in kind of traditional underwritten IPOs, but you can direct list. That's something that I know the NASDAQ opened up a while back. Spotify was a big one. But yeah, you can raise money through Reg A Plus. You can then direct list on the NYSE or NASDAQ. They obviously have certain requirements, valuation, number of investors. The nice thing about a lot of Reg A pluses is you kind of hit those. But yes, you can direct list. And I've seen other companies where they've been publicly traded on, you know, whether it's an OTCQX or NASDAQ, and they've also done a Reg A plus while they've been publicly traded. But, you know, again, some of the specifics best to talk to a securities attorney on the nuts and bolts of that.
Yeah, agreed. And I think I know, at least for the Canadian exchanges, you can then direct list. You may need a BD to engage as a sponsor to do due diligence, but that's going to be significantly cheaper than doing a concurrent financing with the listing. John, how does marketing for Reg A differ from traditional B2B, B2C marketing? And what are some of the key things you're considering when you're launching a campaign?
Sure. It's a great question. It's sort of an extension, you know, as we've talked about here before, the investment dollars are higher than, you know, when you're trying to sell a $50 hoodie. So it's more of an extension of those tactics, and why, you know, things like email nurturing are so important throughout the lifetime of a campaign, or doing ongoing investor webinars, right? So it's such a great touch point for people to get in front of the executive team, be able to come, ask questions. So a lot of our retargeting strategy, email strategy, and on-site strategy is around getting people to sign up for the email list and register for the investor webinars, which we try to hold monthly, right? So, you know, somebody is thinking about a $1,500 purchase to invest in your company. It's great for them to be able to have that touch point. And, you know, typically we're getting the executive team in front of, you know, 300 to 400 people for a live round with Q&A. So those touch points are huge. And going back to the point that Kevin was talking about, yeah, investing up front in the assets, right? It's one of the companies that we work with the Labs Group on is, you know, I talked about the zeitgeist earlier. Well, it doesn't have to be the company that's in the landscaping space. As a result of those assets that they've invested in, they have some of the lower CPAs that we see, and it's directly related to those assets. So, you know, when you're thinking about, you know, spending, you know, say you're raising $20 million and we say, you know, 10% should be ad spend, so $2 million there. If you can get a 10% better performance on your ad spend, right, behind this really good video asset, you know, that pays for itself unless it costs over 200K. So, and it's not gonna, but, you know, having those investments up front and like going back to what Kevin said, being able to package up your story, both in text and visually, is crucial to that. So it's really about those investor touch points and nurturing that, whether that's through, you know, webinars, ongoing email drips, good creative and copywriting.
And you touched on spend a lot, Kevin and Mike. Do you have a sense, or what do you typically tell people when they ask how much, what's the startup cost for these kinds of financing rounds?
Well, you know, I'd say on the legal audit side, it's probably a minimum of $50,000, likely more. And again, depends on the auditor, depends on the level of due diligence that you need the securities attorneys to do. From an ad spend perspective, you know, that's a tough one. I'd say the way that a lot of Reg A pluses work is you can do rolling closes. So you have to set a minimum. You say, I need to raise this much money before I'm going to take any of the money. And so you could set that lower and start to take money on earlier. You can do monthly, biweekly closes. You know, typically monthly is pretty common. Then you can use that capital to fuel more ad spend. So I'd say all things being equal, if you take audit, you take legal, you take ad spend costs, you know, some outside consulting, you could be looking at maybe $150,000 kind of cash out the door before you're able to close on cash from the fundraise and leverage that for increased ad spend. But again, those are kind of rough back of the envelope numbers.
Yeah. I always tell everybody sort of budget in the range of 10%. I know John's saying 10% for marketing. But overall, I mean, I've seen it done for a lot less, and people raise 5, 10, 15 million for, you know, somewhere in the range of 7%. But I've also seen it cost more. And I think one of the things that resonated with me really well was Kevin's comment earlier, and we were talking to him on the phone a couple of weeks ago, is, you know, Reg A is interesting because you can outsource as much as you want. So if you know, the bigger the team that you build and the more of it that you outsource, your costs are going to increase. But, you know, anywhere between 7 and 12% is probably a good benchmark, and I would go from there.
Great. Well, I think we only have a couple of minutes left, so maybe we'll just wrap it up. Thank you very much to the panelists. This was great. A lot of really interesting insights. And for anybody on the webinar, if you have colleagues who couldn't attend, we'll be circulating the slide deck as well as a video. So you can look out for that and check in on this. So thanks again, everyone.